Hey, hey, and welcome in to the House of L podcast. I'm Lawrence Holmes. This is my pod. We are brought to you by Remy Martin. And look who I'm with. It's
hello,
one of my favorite people on the planet. Ben Bradley of Channel 9 is joining me. And this is like 35 years in the making. Now, he's actually been on House of L before, but it is. I joked with someone this week that we've been friends for 35 years.
I mean, this is where our friendship began. You and I and a couple of microphones at WHFH 88.5 FM, your home for Southside Rock.
You're damn right. That's exactly. See, that's a professional broadcaster here. I wanted to bring you on because, look, we love to talk about the business with each other, and we can do some of that if you want. But I walked away so impressed with your piece that you did on sports parenting that I was like, this, we need to talk about this. So before we get into like the nuts and bolts of this, walk me through what made you want to pitch the story.
Well, it's funny you ask that because as an investigative reporter, I would love to be able to tell you that this story, like most of our others, you know, started with a whistleblower or digging deep into City Hall or, you know, exposing some awfulness that needed the bright light of television news. But no, this idea came from, you know, one of those Saturdays where my kids had like five games and we were just bouncing from game to game to game to game and thinking about our own life where five nights a week we have practice or training. And it's funny because my wife, who Lawrence has a deep crush on, which would be fine, except for Molly also has a deep crush on Lawrence. We can, that's a whole nother episode. you know, Molly went to college on a full ride volleyball scholarship. Like she grew up in gyms. She loves this and lives for it. For me, this, like I was the radio nerd, right? So like being all in all the time and giving so much of your life to kids sports when I know they have half my DNA, they are not going to be professional athletes. That has just been kicking around in my head for a while. So I started researching it and that's where the story idea came from.
Yeah. And it's funny because I talk to a lot of parents, like doing this on The Score, for example, you hear from a lot of parents that they're listening to the show because they're in between taking kids from one place to another, or they're going to spend a weekend in Indianapolis or they're going to spend a weekend in Orlando and they're going to drive down there to do it, to have their kids play. I think I'm so fascinated by this. One, I don't have kids, so I'm interested in it from that perspective. Two, growing up in Roseland before I moved out to HF land, we had Jackie Robinson West baseball and this is a neighborhood thing. And I've talked to the people over at JRW and their numbers have lessened over the last like 10 years, even with the success of the 2014 team. And seeing all the specialization that's gone on in sports, I know this from talking to athletes who tell you there's really no reason for a child to specialize probably before ages 13 or 14. All of the people that you see at the elite levels, they played multiple sports. They played soccer and basketball, or they ran track and played football. So when you're looking at this from both a parent and a reporter's standpoint, What stands out to you about how we got to this point where it is big business now?
Yeah. Well, like all things, it starts with a noble goal, right? Like who doesn't want their kid to be athletic? Who doesn't want their kid to be practicing a sport instead of sitting on their phones? And so as that demand grew, you had all these club teams pop up and then you had training pop up and then you had keeping up with the Joneses of, well, boy, is my kid going to make the middle school team unless I start him at 8 years old? And well, will they ever get on the high school team unless they're traveling to Louisville on the weekend as part of this travel team? And it has grown to the point, and this was kind of the news hook for our story, that private equity is jumping in. And let me tell you something, private equity doesn't get into a business because they want your kids to be better athletes or because they think it's healthy and wholesome for your kid. They do it because they think there's a big and growing pool of money to be made. And so as private equity has come in and bought some of the programs out in the suburbs, that we have friends that our kids have been associated with over the years, and done it in what I would call a pretty stealthy way, meaning that coach, that guy who started the club program is probably still there. He just sold a big interest to private equity. And then what'll happen down the road is a bunch of these programs get rolled up and rolled together. And I talked to some coaches who have sold to private equity, were looking at private equity, you know, and they would tell you, hey, you know, the good ones will tell you, you know, we run programming 12 months of the year, not because I'm going to say that your 8-year-old or your 10-year-old or your 12-year-old should only be practicing baseball 12 months a year, but we're doing it because we want to be there for when those kids want to practice.
What type of money are we talking about here?
Well, so the Aspen Institute has a whole program called Project Play. And so every year they put out data on kids' sports, participation rates and the costs. And they've got a lot of good numbers, though as a parent, I must question some of them because—
You looked at your own checking account?
Right here, buddy. This is how I fact checked it, my checkbook. And it was, I mean, so their research said that the average family per kid, per sport, per season spends about a little more than $1,000.
Wow.
That seems really low to me because we have weekends where our kids are traveling for sports that are costing more than that. The other interesting data point they said is on days that have practices or games, the average parent spends a little under 3.5 hours communicating, preparing, you know, cleaning uniforms, driving, waiting for their kid to participate in sports. So that gets to just how all consuming it can become for a family. And P.S., speaking of the Aspen Institute Project Play data, Lawrence, you would think that private equity would be buying up club and travel teams because the participation rates are exploding, that more kids are playing. And that's not true. 39% is the participation rate for competitive kids sports. I think it's 6 to 17 years old. 39%. And you know what it was a decade ago? 39%.
Wow.
So what that tells you is the participation rate isn't climbing, but the amount that people who are participating is growing.
I've heard some horror stories.
The amount that people pay, I'm sorry, is growing.
The horror stories of like people not being able to get ice time because private equity has bought out the ice time. And it's such an important story because I know that most people who get involved aren't thinking that their kid is going to be the next Michael Jordan or the next Angel Reese or the next Caitlin Clark. They're not thinking that. They're thinking about putting their child in competitive sports to teach the lessons that we get from competitive sports or from ballet or piano or anything else. And then it seems like such an arms race that's going on. I want to tap into you, the parent, for a second. Your boys, by the way, are better athletes than you give them credit for.
they are good athletes, yeah.
Yes. Shout out to Molly. Yes, shout out to Molly for her genes. But understanding, like, where do you think it shifted for you where you're going, oh, well, we'll get them in the neighborhood thing. And then the neighborhood thing becomes private lessons or the neighborhood thing becomes club sports. Where did it shift?
Interesting. So let me say my kids love the sports that they participate in. They get a lot of joy in it. They don't roll their eyes or get frustrated when they have to go to practice. So for my money, that's healthy. Like I want to be clear. Like, I think kids' sports have been really good for my kids. You know, I do see the pressure to, you know, okay, well, you're on middle school basketball. Well, now you got to go to this other program so you can train. So then when you're getting ready for high school, you've got a good shot there. I mean, this is keeping up with the Joneses. And that's the other, I think, dirty little secret of the impact of even the most noble club and travel programs on our communities is, you know, who gets hurt the most? Inner city neighborhoods.
100%.
Where, you know, think about when you and I were growing up and the Chicago high schools, for example, Simeon and others that had like these powerhouse programs. When a kid is at the top of their peer group, all of a sudden, now they're going off to IMG in Florida, or they are doing some travel program that says, well, it's at the same time as your high school program, so you're not going to do your high school program, or it's at the same time as your neighborhood Jackie Robinson West program, or whatever it is. And so what ends up happening is, whereas sports used to be kind of the focal point for a community where everyone kind of rallies around, now your better players are breaking away from that and going off into these specialized programs.
That point is a really important one. And it's one where you can see money change the trajectory of someone who might have a chance to be a college or a pro athlete because they're not getting the coaching or training that someone who is maybe close to where they're at athletically is getting. And so when they are presented to some of these coaches, it looks like they're behind. It's been one of the issues about, strangely enough, about baseball, where there's the training, there's a technology aspect to this too, where you're in a position, if I had kids, I would be in a position to get the best cleats, the best gloves, the best bats in baseball, for example, or to send someone to a trainer. It's been a question even inside the NBA right now where people think that if you look around the league, there's a lot of sons of former players. And people think that it's the genetics. That's partly it, but it's partly because they were able to start nutrition earlier. They were able to get them in a weightlifting program earlier. They were able to get them a shot coach earlier. And so if you're someone who didn't have the means growing up, that target of being able to compete, it shrinks a little bit. It makes it more difficult for you to get on their level.
And whereas sports used to be the equalizer, or in some cases, the thing that would get the kid out of the neighborhood. And, you know, every little kid's dream is to be an NBA star. Well, now, because there is so much money involved in the preparation of it, once again, poor kids are at a disadvantage. And that's the other thing that the Aspen Institute's research found, is that, if you are lower income, your kids are not participating as fully in these club sports. And so therefore, what do you think happens when you meet up with somebody who's had the advantage of all of that for years, and you're competing with them for a spot on the team?
You're a pro at running your life, at committing to your workout, at showing up every day. At Bombas, we're pros too. Pros at making socks. Our sport assortment has specialized socks for whatever sport you're committed to. Running, hiking, golf, Pilates, and so much more. Made with sweat-wicking yarns, blister-fighting details, and targeted arch support. Bombas Sport is pro-level socks from the pros of socks. For another pro, you. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com and use code audio.
The high school coach used to be God. Like, and look, we're products of that too. Coach Wren was God.
Coach Wren. Yep.
you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And getting in front of him was really important. I wonder how, I don't know if you talk to any, how many high school coaches you talk to, but I do wonder how they feel about this, because I don't mean just from the power dynamic standpoint, but most of the time the coaches that are in those spots are doing it because they want to teach sports. A lot of them are PE teachers, for example. Yeah. They want to teach, and they're finding that the best athletes in the school might not even necessarily want to work and represent the neighborhood, the team. And that to me is weird too, because that used to be, that was the measuring contest. Hey, I'm the best kid on my block. Hey, I'm the best kid at my school. I'm the best kid in the city. And now some of that has gone away.
Yeah. And I think what you're also seeing is that some of these high school coaches are actually getting paid on the side to run the summer programs and the camps for the younger kids. And so if you're a family who wants your kid to do well at the local high school on the football team, you might be saying, well, I better make sure that starting in sixth grade, I send him to coach's camp in the summer where they'll get to know that kid. And again, like, none of this is inherently bad. I would rather have my kids learning the million and one great life lessons that they do from sports than sitting on their phones. What our story was just meant to highlight is have this conversation that you and I are having right now, which is to say, it's really easy to not notice all of the competition now for your time and your dollars as a parent. And what parent, by the way, doesn't want to give their kid the best? And there is absolutely a keeping up with the Joneses mentality when it comes to, you're sitting on the sidelines with a parent in the fifth grade at Little League, and it's, I sent him to a hitting coach. Did your kid go to the hitting coach? And you're like, oh my God, what do you mean you didn't go to it? Maybe I'm a failure as a parent.
What's been the feedback that you've gotten?
It's so funny because I always joke the stories that we spend the most time on and that we think are the most impactful, in terms of investigating government and politics and money, are oftentimes not the ones that resonate the most. And this was an example of it. We've heard from so many people who saw our story, which was called Cashing In on Kids Sports. It's still on our website at WGB.com. But people who can just relate, people who were messaging me going, oh my gosh, I just watched your story while sitting in my car waiting at my kid's practice. And I didn't know that private equity was getting in on this. I didn't know that. And that's what a good story does, right? Is it sparks a conversation. And good stories, I always think, don't pass judgment. They spark a conversation about what do we want to be doing here? What's best?
What's cool about it too, because I know that you're a wonk about this stuff like I am, it shows a power of hyper local. Like, this resonates with people. Like, everyone within the viewing audience of Channel 9, just over the antenna on cable. But then it resonates with people that saw it across the country via the Facebook page or the website. The idea of, these are some of the stories that are important to tell because it matters to the people who are in your audience.
And we as journalists, it's so easy to miss these stories because they're so routine, right? Nobody calls a press conference to say, I want to talk about kids' sports. Nobody files a lawsuit. Nobody does the things that I think normally trigger journalism or these types of conversations. The other interesting thing we found in our story was, how different suburbs have tried to position themselves to be mega sports hubs. New Lenox, not too far from where you and I grew up, a southwest suburb that, Lawrence, when you and I were growing up,
there was nothing.
Basically, corn and soybean fields. They have seen in the last 15 years, like a lot of other southwest suburbs, like warehouses for Amazon and other logistics centers popping up everywhere. And the mayor in New Lenox, Tim Balderman, said, I saw private equity getting involved in kids' sports. He saw it, you know, with his own kids, the experience. And he said, hey, we don't have baseball and softball fields around here. Why don't we try to be a regional hub for this? So he spent $70 million to build this beautiful facility that's sponsored by Wintrust. And there's the Coors Light, you know, lounge for parents to sit and overlook the baseball fields. And every weekend it's booked from April through October for regional baseball and softball play. So then Mayor Balderman says, well, that's great, but how do we get people here to these hotels and restaurants that we're building around this facility? How do we get people here in the winter? So now they're doing an indoor facility for $40 million that'll do, you know, baseball and wrestling and all that other stuff. And to his point, New Lenox would much rather have the money that comes in through sales tax and property tax from actual, you know, hotels and restaurants and being a tourism hub than having kind of lifeless warehouses, which don't generate as much money.
Well, I tell you this too often. I'm very proud of you. I thought this story was great. I thought the importance of it, the timeliness of it was outstanding. And I feel like there'll be an opportunity if you want, if it's requested for follow-ups here, like this could be a 10 part series, man.
Oh, no.
It could be a 10 part series.
I'm still not sure if my wife and kids think it was such a good idea for me to do the story, because we were at basketball. My kids my oldest is a senior on the high school basketball team, and other parents are coming up to me going, so what? You're like, you don't think this is good? They're commenting on it. So
yeah, if he's on TV, how about that?
Yeah, I say, you know, listen, of all the comments people make to me on social media, I'll take positive comments whenever I can get them.
No doubt about it. My friend, I appreciate it. Thanks for the hard work. Thanks.
I am proud to call you a friend for 30 years, which shows how old we are. But to see and listen to you, I think I told you 25 years ago, Lawrence, like as we've covered in this, I am not like a sports nut. I'm not somebody who needs to tune into sports radio to hear, you know, the ins and outs of plays and players. But the way you have elevated the conversation around sports is admirable and a testament to the man that I grew up with. So
I appreciate that.
Love you, my friend.
I love you too. Go get your ice cream.
You're not supposed to out me.
Go get your ice cream, man. It's totally okay.
Thank you very much. You don't get a body like this by skipping ice cream.
I know that's right. Whatever. I'll talk to you later.
See
ya. That is Ben Bradley of Channel 9 and WHFH 88.5 Flossmoor back in the day. He's a good man and he does incredible work. And he has been. He's been this dude for 35 years, man. And I'm impressed by him every single day. And as they say, like, he's a really, really strong reporter. He's a great husband and dad. And I seeing him put all of that stuff into this story was really, really fascinating. So I hope you enjoyed the episode. I know you got comments because I know that you got kids and you've been dealing with some of this stuff. So leave a comment about this and let me know what your story was like when it came to taking your kids and getting them involved in sports. And I'll be inside the replies. All right. I will talk to you next time. Peace.